Cross my heart and hope to die. If I ever, ever told a lie, feeling send you, teacher said, to the bad place when you're dead. Washington, he never lied.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic with fanfic. That itself is the synthesis and follow the popular game of a post-apocalyptic wasteland and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi, I'm joined once again with my co-host Weird. Say hello, Weird.
For the last time, I will tell you, and our dear listeners, that my full and proper title is Sir Weirdington Esquire. At least the last time for a little while. I've decided that going forward, since this is an occasion of great change, this recap episode, the at the epilogue of an entire book portion of our endeavor, in book four, which promises to be a real rip snorer, a real fucking slog. I'm gonna keep our hopes up by devising new titles to mark myself with.
New and exciting titles.
Look forward to a procession of coronations, as I'm. Look for the appropriate pedigree to brand myself with and carry us forward through these dark times ahead.
Yeah, we're back, folks. Yeah, we're book three finale. I didn't realize, like, didn't think we'd be getting through this book so goddamn fast, but we are. The slow march of time plods on.
It didn't feel brief.
It doesn't, but at the same, it's paradoxical. Like it feels like just yesterday that we started this, and all of a sudden we're like we're three out of five books down. So
yeah, you know what? I will agree to that. Like it's. This book was not a quick ride. This particular book was a hell of a slog. But overall, yeah, we're a lot of episodes in out of nowhere.
That just happens out of nowhere. But yeah, so this is our big book recap. As usual, these are far lighter and far more of just like. Us trying to like dissect and complain about individual plot points rather than trying to do a like dry recitation of the facts so far. For just general laying out our immediate we gotta do at least somewhat of a rundown of everything that even happened in this book. Normally this would be the time I just deferred completely over to Weird, but I think we kinda have to like help each other remember what happened to this fucking book.
Yeah. Because it's not easy with this one. Because this, like, there was no... Like, previous chapters, you could trick yourself into thinking there was some sort of broad vision. Like I can visualize, like, Somber having, like, set some bullet points up for himself. Or at least, like, he lucked into, like, a, like, what felt like something of a dramatic conclusion for like the primary arc.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning of the book sort of set up some principal antagonists or a principal antagonist or a principal conflict, and the book ends with like that happening with that being finally addressed. But this one is just a hot mess.
A really, really, really quick breakdown of everything that's happened so far that comes off the top of the dome piece, this was the book in which, BJ started off dying, came back as Jesus, meandered around.
Oh shit, I forgot. Oh, hold on. I'm gonna write these down. This is a multi-arc. This book was like many arcs. So arc one, the death and resurrection of Pony.
Yes.
The death and resurrection.
The life and times of Jesus Christ. Black
of Ultra Jack. Guy.
Yes. The crucified robo cyber Jesus. Cyber polyamorous bisexual horse Jesus. who doesn't afraid of everything but cries about everything.
Okay, so the death and resurrection of Ultra Guy, complete with, like, our very clear self-insert protagonists, I forget the term for, like, there's a term for Mary Sue that is a novice author's direct response to, like, well, I don't want to have a Mary Sue, so my character will be the worst. Would just be, like, super awful at everything, like, just a garbage person that no one likes and who can't accomplish anything.
Yeah, not to contribute to lowball critical analysis, but I think the term is, like, literally just called an anti-Sue. It's literally just invert all.
Yeah, I could swear I've heard another term for it, but, like, yeah, this is, like, the death and resurrection of Ultra Guy. And I'm calling it that because it ends with sort of an apotheosis of Blackjack as a, like, my OC is so great, in that, like, she makes out with, she poisons and then cures of drug addiction and makes out with the principal protagonist of the thing this is a fanfic of.
Which, as far as, like, general grievous sins of fan fiction, is not necessarily anything new, but it's so hacky and lame to do anyway.
It's so textbook. It's so, like,
you did the thing that fanfictions do.
That's followed by, oh wait, right, Sanguine is a guy.
Yeah, the wacky adventurers of Sanguine the idiot. Because we are set up the idea that Sanguine is the bad guy. And then everything goes out of its way to establish that he is the biggest fuck-up in the world. He has just been bumble-fucking his way through the entirety of the story, up to this point, apparently. And making all of the wrong moves and all of the mistakes. And it's all justified because he has a family, and he cares about them. And then they get eviscerated in front of him.
Like, and that arc is, like, two parts, and, like, it's kind of astonishing because it's, again, almost good writing in that, like, the first half is all, in wrestling terminology, like, building heel heat.
Yes.
And, like, building heel heat is like, I don't know, Macho Man Randy Savage breaks Ricky Steamboat's larynx with the ring bell, and then, like, disrespects him in a bunch of ways, and, like, you're, like, in wrestling term, building heel heat is, like, the bad guy keeps doing bad stuff, and he keeps not getting punished. Like, he just keeps, like, making things worse and worse for our babyface, our hero. And will no one stop him? Can anyone stop him? Is he just going to walk away?
My God, that's Blackjack's theme music!
And then we like do the mon, like, and that leads to at our hero's lowest point, at Vader cuts off Luke's hand. Then we have, like, the build up to Luke coming back to have the final confrontation. Or, like, yeah, that's when, like, the rematch has been announced. We get some press on Ricky Steamboat doing his IRL montage. We can get a bunch of babyface heat by really showing off Ricky Steamboat is preparing for the big match. And that's, like, the dungeon crawl to Sanguine's inner lair. Like the hand cut off is that that's fucking a thing I want to talk about.
Yeah, but to put it into more terms of the actual story, it's Blackjack wandering through and fighting cool robots and, like, showing off her cybernetics and having that big old dumb slobber knocker with Brass, who, if we remember, is the Manticore pony that she has a sword fight with.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yes.
At all. Well, I was going to summarize it as, like, first we see a bunch of atrocities. We have a confrontation with Somber, Sanguine, that goes bad for our heroes. The bad guy wins round one, And then match two is we do a big dungeon crawl, big fights, yada yada. Big baddies on our main heels team are get a final confront, like the dragon to the overlord is finally slain. And we get our final confrontation, and it just goes down like a wet fart. Like after all the like first half build up, and then the big like long slog to our final reconciliation, our final like confrontation and fight, and it turns out he wasn't a bad guy after all. He did it all for his family.
And like the thing is that like I think that Sombra trying to be subversive there. Like I think that's meant to be like. Like, because that's almost clever. Like, it's if it wasn't so saccharine and wasn't so dumb, I could almost see it working. Like, if there was more, if it was less edgy in the way that it set up how he went about his like heel heat generation. Like, if it wasn't him like killing entire towns of innocent people, then like you could almost understand the reconciliation at the end. I'm going to be saying reconciliation a lot today, by the way. It's my buzzword today. You can almost understand the idea that like, okay, cool. Like it's a man damned by his actions to do good, which is kind of the theme of the story. And it's almost sort of the thing that the story is about. But the problem with it is that like, it's hard to care about Sanguine because he's both a terribly written character and B, like, a complete, it's such an utter facsimile and joke to have like this happen because he does such evil shit and then basically just like, no, none of that actually happened. Like the Walmart isn't actually burnt down. Nothing really bad happened except for that one town, and that town was like mostly gangers, and I guess that's okay because of that. So it's all good.
Well, I mean, like he goes to like further like reel it back to like tell you that like. Like, I don't know how you, like, establish credibility with an audience when, like, your big pop is to say, oh, I was lying to you all along. Like that. I think that's a big part of why we've been so heavily demoralized is that arc two of this, like, short story collection, I guess. Like, of this novelette collection that is book three. Pulls the rug out from under the audience, and as the author says, "Ha! I was lying to you. You can't trust me anymore. You'll never be able to trust any of the tension building I ever set up for you again because it could just turn out I was lying."
So I don't necessarily buy that as an argument. I think that I think it's still fine if you do it once. So the thing is, as far as the audience knows, going as far as the book is presented. Doing the twist that the main bad guy was kind of just fucking around, and he isn't the real bad guy, because of course there's more story, like you have to set up more dragons.
I mean, like
but
so
my point being, sorry, is that just that's fine if you do it the one time, but spoiler warnings for later things, this becomes the trend of the entire series, is villains who essentially have spontaneous moments of coming to Jesus at the last minute.
So the other problem with this arc that I was gonna use as a transition to talking about the next arc is the ball is passed really shittily. Like Somber, it looks like at the beginning of like part two, oh right, Sanguine, part one, part A, part two A. Ends with Sanguine saying, "You fool, you've delayed me so long that other problem has risen."
Yeah.
Now I have to do this, like, for my own reasons, and to deal with other problem that has arisen. But then, like, in part 2B, Somber shoots himself in the foot by, like, just making other problem a Kilmatron 5000 that doesn't seem connected to anything. Like, he doesn't give us any, this should lead into, book three, part three, being, where the fuck did Kilmatron come from? Or, oh no, the Kilmatron is still rampaging? Like, we didn't give Somber what he wanted in time, and so now the Kilmatron is a thing. But, like, as it stands, the Kilmatron is a complete mystery.
Well, it's not even
gone ignored for the rest of the
book.
Well,
the Kilmatron thing isn't even a thing. It's just literally the voice of a thing that's kind of related. Like, that's That's the thing. Like, the robot is just there's just a voice being transmitted through it. That's all we got, which has come up multiple times. Like, there has been foreshadowing to this, but the thing, I will agree with you that, like, it's weird that the rest of, like, it's weird that, like, so, like, something that, like, we're going to talk about a bit more after we do, like, the proper breakdown of this chapter a little bit, about how, like, the pacing of this book is really fucked and weird, and it's weird that, like, after beating Sanguine and being told that, like, okay, we beat, like, Lord Genome, the next big thing is happening. Like, we gotta fight the anti-spirals. But then the rest of the chapter should be the road to that happening. But instead it's like, okay, let's just have a bunch of unconnected side stories happen that I just want to bang out. I don't understand why the rest of this book is as long as it is and the way it's structured the way it is. The only way I can surmise why it's separated into books at all is because I'm assuming Somber had some sort of internal, like, page count or deadline decision or something like that. Hit a box that basically just said, like, this needs to be this long before I can make it a book. Because, like, that's the thing to remember about this. That the decision to separate these into books was not made after the fact. This was done as it was happening. Which meant that there was, like, somewhat of a plan of how long each of them should be. So I honestly do believe that the back half of this is mostly padding to set up for the next book. And just, like, hammering out some, like, vague ideas that, like, Somber had that were just, like, I want to do a heist movie, or I want to do, I just want to, like, hang out in a bunch of other new locations and stuff. I want to set up some other new bad guys. And that was, like, that seems to be, like, the bulk of what the back half of book three is. But yeah, we beat Sanguine, and then we move on to, like, yeah, like, arc. You say we're, like, arc two is what you're saying? Like act B?
So, like, part one was the death and resurrection of Ultra Guy. Part two was, oh, right, Sanguine, which includes in it sort of a micro arc involving, like, going back to the hospital again, basically a rehash of the Fallen has lost her wing.
Because now she's Rainbow Dash.
And now she's just Rainbow Dash. Instead of, like, got her wing back, but it's Rainbow Dash's wing, because she's Rainbow Dash. Yeah, and then we have the whole fucking shit with inventory space is at risk of dying, and 21's entire character arc and relevance ends with him becoming the ultimate monster.
Yeah.
Fuck, we actually do it twice. Like, we have a fake out of, like, we go to some hell prison where we get more heel heat for horse version of the bad guy from Inglourious Basterds. And then that's not enough, so we go to the bigger prison, which takes us a long time to get there. And then, like, an episode or two setting up the Ocean's 11 crew. And then we go in the building.
An entire D&D adventure happens.
Yeah, just a big old dumb D&D adventure that ends with more teasing for the thing that we probably should have been doing. Like, whatever is happening in the core, which I don't know whether or not that's related to the Kilmatron that came after us, and at the end of Somber's section, or Sanguine's section. Yeah, no, I don't know what's happening or what's happened, other than we've been told that Blackjack is extra double more dead.
Yeah, her soul exploded. She's soul exploded.
I don't know how the fuck you're supposed to come back from soul dead.
But we'll find out next book.
It hurts my heart. Like, you know what? This is, I gotta give Somber something.
Are feeling an emotion.
Well, no, I don't know that I've ever encountered a piece of fiction that did soul dead. Except, I guess, the Avengers. and they're going to fix that somehow. So, yeah, well...
Yeah, Blackjack's friends are going to assemble the Infinity Stones.
Well, no, like, spoilers for the Avengers, because it sucks. I mean, if you haven't watched it already, like, don't bother. But at the end of Avengers Endgame, or no, in the middle of it somewhere, Black Widow is sacrificed to a magic cliff.
Yes.
Throws herself off a magic cliff to magic die, which gives our heroes access to the Soul Stone to save the day. And the Infinity Gems can't bring her back because she died magically. So presumably, like, she's ultra super dead. But now she gets like a movie trilogy. So I don't know if that's supposed to be prequels or they solve it somehow.
Or anything. Like,
they completely negate all relevance. Yeah. Hatsune Miku's A Death and Resurrection of Superman series. It's a fun watch on YouTube. It's too bad that it was written and stars known sexual predator Hatsune Miku. Not sexual, abusive lover, anyway. I don't know. Anyway, I think we've covered the entire book, and writing it down looks like it was basically just in three parts. Like we like start with like an isolated story about the resurrection
and like yeah of, and like how it works and
how it works, its impact, and we do a quick masturbatory tour of the first story, wherein everybody gets a character assassination, and our protagonist shows how much better they are, how much better Ultra Guy is than Superman,
yes,
by having them make out. And then in part two, we had an overriding plot with a central villain. Let's go ahead and wipe our asses with that real quick. And then once that was done, we just fucking fart about in abandoned prisons and tell the protagonists a heart essential essence explodes.
yep, that happens.
And so I've got two things, on the docket.
I have many.
I know that you have.
I have a big list of points that I want to drag us through.
Well, I've one of them. So, first off, hostage situations. This book, this whole story, over the course of the last three books, we've had several extremely insultingly stupid hostage situations. And I just wanted to talk real quick about how they aggravate me, because especially the one where like Sanguine is holding Charity hostage and Blackjack hands over the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Blackjack is supposed to be a cop, and so she would, like, know this? Like, should be able to understand how to, like, appraise a hostage situation. And the thing about a hostage situation is that hostages are only really valuable if you are in a position beyond reproach, if you have positioned yourself beyond retaliation. Because if you haven't positioned yourself beyond retaliation... The math involved in a hostage situation is that you yourself are a hostage.
Mm-hmm.
You have a hostage, but you are a hostage.
Yeah, I don't know. I still don't think there's that much worth in arguing from a logistical perspective about how hostage situations don't make any sense. I would say why this one doesn't especially work very well is that Blackjack has no reason to not immediately shoot Sanguine literally the second he lets her go. Like, there's literally no reason not to. There's literally, like, she's not in a position where she's, like, low on magic points or whatever and, like, can't do the thing where she just shoots the guy immediately after getting the hostage. Like, there's literally no reason for that to have happened, but, like, basically, like, everyone in this story has the ability to just immediately escape whenever they need to.
The thing that frustrates me is that I desperately want to see... The thing that I crave is to see, like, any of the heroes at any point in any one of these situations. And the most recent one was Blackjack is given a necromantic curse. So like Blackjack versus Sanguine or Rampage versus Snips should have been, okay, hey, you're gonna undo this, you're gonna let the hostage go, or I'm gonna destroy you. In the Sanguine case, like, you could have, like, set up for a final confrontation later by having, like, Blackjack be actually cool for once, demonstrate being, like, a cool badass in any meaningful way by saying, like, okay, like, you've got one thing I want, and that's the child's life, and I've got two things you want, which is, one, the thing under my wrist, and the other is to survive this encounter.
God, you know,
you can have one.
So it just hit me, like, where this all falls apart, and, like, why. So why this falls apart is stupid, which is, it's something that Blackjack doesn't know, but the audience knows. So if you've read the original story, and you're a nerd like I am, you know what a Canterlot ghoul is, or a Pink Cloud ghoul is. And an important detail about Canterlot ghouls is they are functionally immortal. The only way to kill them is to cut them into chunks. But Blackjack doesn't know that, but the audience does. And because Somber, we're going to get into this later, how Somber writes the story in a reactive way, and, like, it's really dawned on me in the last little while. But Somber knows that the audience knows that she can't actually do anything. Because if she does the, like, cool, like Firefly Mao thing where she just shoots him in the head, it's not going to do anything to him. He's just going to be like, lol, I have DR. But she doesn't know that. Like, you are right in, like, describing the way that, like, that it doesn't make sense why she doesn't just immediately destroy him after getting the hostage. But the answer is because, like, Canterlot ghouls are far, far stronger than regular flavored ghouls and are functionally immortal. But, again, Blackjack has no reason to know this. She's never been to Canterlot. She doesn't know how Canterlot ghouls work. Basically, no one does outside of there. Like, I don't want to call it a plot hole, because it's not really a plot hole. It's an
inconsistency of, like, characterization. It's a failure of in-setting, like, logic. It's a failure of character writing. Like, it's like the characters aren't responding with their own, like, agendas and motivation, and based on their best knowledge, they're puppets to the author's, like, whim, like a desire for, like, the author desires an outcome without regard to why anyone would do that.
Yeah, Blackjack is effectively metagaming. Like, it's using knowledge she should not, like, she is reacting in a way that she, having knowledge, she should not and could not have. There is literally no way she could possibly have known how a Canterlot ghoul works. But still, effectively,
I mean, that's really symptomatic of everything else wrong with this book.
Yes,
because, like, the entire last half is nothing anyone does is grounded in their knowledge or motivations or, like, any reason anyone would do a thing.
Yeah. Okay. I want to get started talking on some of these points, though. I think we covered the hostage situation thing. I totally agree with you that it doesn't make any sense, but, like, the reason it doesn't make any sense is because of terrible, like, meta-gamey bad writing.
Well, like, that's just one example. Like, I can't remember off the top of my head the, like, I can just remember the hurt. Like, that there's a scar on my brain from the number of times this has happened in previous books, and it happened at least twice in this book. Once on the train, and then the other time with the, like, effective hostage situation of the time bomb curse.
Yeah.
That, like, the same situation of, oh, okay, you know, you're, like, in our hands, right? You're helpless to our retaliation. If Fearless Leader's soul explodes, we're gonna destroy you with this magic sword. Undo it.
Yeah. And
even then, even within that paradigm, Somber could still have his fucking cake and eat it too. Like they confront him with that, and he goes, "Well, gosh, I am a moron for, like, whose soul, like, character trait is being a moron with another moron from the original series. So it didn't occur to me that I was in a bad negotiating position. But it doesn't matter because it turns out that, like, only the guy we're trying to rescue could even undo it. So, like, your fate's tied to theirs.
Yeah.
And then you could, like, now you still have the time, like okay, I put this time bomb on you, and only the reason I am here can undo it.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't even think of that. Like, it didn't,
yeah. Just didn't occur to anybody because they wanted the set piece. But yeah, anyways, I'm going to just go down the list of all the points that I have that we haven't already, like, hit, and I have many, many, many of them. First, that we have talked about many times throughout the course of this podcast, but I really want to, like, really hammer home how fucking weird this character has been through the course of this book alone. I want to talk about Rampage and every fucking terrible thing about her. I wrote this point as Rampage and the miasma of characters. So to back up about Rampage, anecdotal detail that I have been told by other people within the community is that Rampage initially started off as a self-insert character of one of the editors. And I believe that damned to be true, because it makes a lot about how Rampage's characterization and personality is, and her just general character and character details make a hell of a lot more sense. Because Rampage is effectively the main character of a different story that's happening. Insanely complicated, has literally dozens of hanging hooks about her character. She's virtually immortal. She's a super cool badass. She is the main character of so many shitty pulp novels, like shitty self-publishing pulp action hero novels. But the thing I wanted to, like, really hone in about Rampage, because we talked about her a lot through the course of the story, is that I wanted to hone on and just, like, fucking indecisive everyone working on this project is about her as a character. Because when she's initially, like when she's initially presented, she's presented as a character who's a paradox of character, where she is the quintessential, like, noble murderer. She is a murder for hire that is functionally immortal. She's basically Wolverine. Like, she's more or less literally Wolverine.
No, I mean, no, she's Deadpool.
Well, I mean,
she's a more degenerated Wolverine.
I was gonna say she's Knucklehead Wolverine. I don't know. I think it's arguing whether or not she's Wolverine or Deadpool is besides the point, because, like, you can make one argument one way or the other. But yeah,
I only say Deadpool because Deadpool is functionally Wolverine, but more chuddy.
Yeah,
like Wolverine, but like
crazy.
Like crazy. And what if Wolverine got to use guns?
Yeah,
and like. And was, like, morally ambiguous, so you never know if he's a good guy or a bad guy. Whereas Wolverine is always just a very grouchy good guy.
Yeah.
Unambiguous, like Wolverine, like, is unambiguously a good guy, even though he sometimes takes, like, extreme measures. Whereas Deadpool is, like, totally morally ambiguous, depending upon, like, what the author needs for him at any given moment.
I think the fact that we have the capacity to argue about which ripoff she is of really sells how, like, confused.
How disjointed, yeah. Like, yeah.
So yeah, initially she's something of, like, a Wolverine or Brock Samson, an unrepentant sociopath who just kind of is on the good guy's side, is somewhat of her characterization, which is initially fun. She presents, like, good character balance to the goody two shoes nature of the rest of the story. As Blackjack is more and more revealed to be an unloving serial killer with severe rage issues, this sort of falls away. Book three is a very interesting, weird case, because I think this is around as far as I can understand, this is around the time that the editor departed, which really showcases off how fucking weird Rampage gets in this book. Because we're added an additional hint in her immortality, superpowered bullshit character by being told, okay, she has a bunch of headmates, and they all have a certain amount of control over her actions at any given moment. And it seems to be that, like, either the author or the editor or the author internally could not decide how that worked exactly. Because we're presented, like, multiple different cases of similar situations where we're presented, like, okay, so their souls trapped inside of her, they all act as if they are just in the throes of their dying moments. Or they act as if they were, like, so some of them, like, literally are stuck in, like, a loop of them just kind of repeating the last moments before their death. But a couple of them are also just living out the normal lives that they were living. Like, the baby murderer just seems to only have the character of baby murderer. But where this gets really extra weird, this initially gets set up at the end of book two, leading into book three, that there's a bit where BJ is asking for death, and I don't remember if I covered this in the actual episode, but BJ's asking for death after she's been reduced to being Torsi the Torso Horse, in which the baby killer shows up and basically, like, mocks her for wanting death now and that she doesn't deserve it, which implies a certain level of lucidity that wasn't initially present with the souls. Like, it just, nothing about the soul box has any sort of established rules. So it's very confusing to suss out when the actual change in characterization actually happened. The thing that I think is the worst part about Rampage and her horrible miasma of garbage is that there are shades of an interesting character there. Like, you can, like, either a spin of it as a character who is a bored immortal who has lived for so long that they've seen everything, done everything, and is kind of just fell into being a good guy out of just sheer, like, boredom over the nature of society. Or writing her as a character where she has multiple, like, weird headmates that contribute to a sort of gestalt entity of personalities that solve problems in a sort of interesting collective is a neat concept as well. But we're kind of, like, given half-sees of all of these ideas, because I think generally what comes down to with Rampage is that I think the author is as equally confused about their character as we are, and it reads that way to me.
Yeah, and I've just had, like, a flashback to, so there was a time where I played weekly tabletops. I don't know how to, like, not be mean and try and describe, like, this group. The house was, like, ambient mold was sort of a thing. Anyway, it was the kind of group that contained this dude who has a sort of go-to character whose, like, powers, abilities, and history evolves every time they play a game with RPG elements, like a video game. They like, add to this character their history and repertoire of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the character would, like, evolve if, say, they picked up Dark Souls, and then would, like, gain even more stuff if they played Skyrim. So, like, it's a character who, like, in their personal headcanon, both has, like, a Bloodborne old blood powers and the, like, Fosruda.
Yeah.
And so I'm just trying to imagine somebody listening that guy describe his go-to OC.
Yes. And that's Rampage.
And then and then have to, like, put that, like, with the instruction, put this character in your thing.
Yes.
And so it feels like not entirely intentional, but, like, in the hindbrain of this chud Somber had working for him. Like, Somber said, okay, you get to have a character in the story as part of the roster.
My character is all the characters.
Yeah, my character is six characters.
My power is to have every power.
My power is to be six OCs.
And all of their powers is to have every power.
Yeah.
And they also have a shield that can block anything.
Yeah. And so trying to, like, and being, like, not the smartest crayon in the freezer, Somber, like, having to listen to this and then try to transcribe it as best they understand it. like it really does explain why, like, how Somber, like, doesn't have the strongest grip on who this character is and what they're about.
I don't think anyone does. No one,
especially once the original, like, baby daddy, like, left the team and could no longer be consulted.
And so I have to raise this baby murderer on my own. But I guess, like, to bring it into a broader context, the reason why I feel like we end up talking about Rampage so much, like, why we are so laser focused on this particular child, genuinely feel that they're like a microcosm of, like, the whole badness of the story as a whole is contained within this character. She is a wild, chaotic mess that has, like, some fun points to her, but it's so mired in, like, an author's desperate attempts to try and make it, like, cool and interesting and subversive and complicated, but not really understanding, like, how to do any of those things. So they're just, like, a wild ball of chaos that is sometimes fun and other times the worst thing in the entire goddamn story all at once. But, so that was, I guess that's just why I find, like, I guess I just to, like, restate, like, why we, like, end up talking about Rampage so much. Like,
yeah, actually kind of think of it, like, now that we've said this out loud and articulated it, I suddenly understand why people like this fucking garbage story. Like, why people like Project Horizons, how that manages to happen. Especially if you're not a discerning connoisseur of storytelling.
If you're not woke.
If you aren't even at least self-educated in like writing. 101, like if you aren't at all a critic of the media you consume, if you make something big enough and just pour in enough shit, someone will be able to hang their hat on something.
Yes.
And I, like, up to this point, I've had total contempt for the fan base of Project Horizons. I got to admit, I'm going to put my cards on the table there.
Oh, and
I've had growing contempt,
and they absolutely deserve it. Like, people who are, like, still who like unironically enjoy the whole enchilada are actually horrible people. But, like, people who can be like, okay, I like this up to a certain point, are far more understandable human beings in my book.
Every time I look at, like, anything like official art of the character, it stops. Like, it becomes no longer true. And every time, like, the character, like, says or does a thing, or more pointedly doesn't do a thing, which is the more aggravating thing, when Rampage fails to do a thing, it stops being true. But in a weird abstract, I am a fan of Rampage, like, so much so that I've stopped, like, dismissively calling her Deadpool. Like, I mentioned that before, is that, like, this character is such a fucking mess, such a maelstrom of undeveloped notions.
But she's our mess, like, damn it!
Yeah, well, no, like, not even. Like, I've, from the buffet of things that Rampage could be, I've filled my plate. with like some best ofs. Like, there is a picture of this character that I have painted in my own head, which is, like, basically my OC. Like, there's almost nothing in the actual, like, text to support my vision for this character.
Oh, absolutely.
But yet I've managed to become a fan because, like, it's such a collage of unused concepts that, like, there's something in there for, like, anyone, and if you have enough levels of removal from the actual text, then you can become convinced that you like this character.
Yes. All right. I'm gonna move on. Some of these points I'm gonna have to mush together, just for time. The one I really want to talk about that's very specific to this specific book of book three is I titled this one Pacing and How to Suck at It. So absolutely goddamn everything about pacing is incredibly hard to explain and nuanced, and I'm not articulate enough to to explain how bad pacing is, but I can definitely try to explain how bad pacing feels. And bad pacing feels like you've killed your bad guy halfway through your third book and don't have anything else to do. pacing for Project Horizons has always been really bad, and that is a symptom of sequential forward-facing storytelling, what we like to call Calvin Ball around here, which is a reference to Calvin Hobbes, which we've taken from a friend, which Calvin Ball is you make up all the rules as you go along, and Calvin always wins. That's the joke of it. And when it pertains to storytelling, it's you are literally always moving forwards, like a shark. If you go backwards, you die. And you're also making everything up as you're going along, and edits are primarily done forwards. It's not impossible to write a good or functional story this way, but it's very, very difficult. You plague your story with tone problems, theme problems, characterization problems. You like the way that typically do it is to have a very tight knit of cast that have a sitcom like episodic nature to their storytelling, where they just are experiencing dumb things happening to them every week. It's much harder to write sprawling stories with them.
I would argue, like my insistence, on the other hand, is that I think it's fine. I think you can do it. I think there's a bunch of different things that got their start.
Well, I'm not saying impossible. It's really just very different.
Well, no. Well, I'm just saying how I think you do it. The key ingredient I'm convinced of, and I could name a couple things that sort of got started that way, and finally came to a conclusion. I'm a big fan of the now defunct webcomic 8-Bit Theater. And it functioned that way, basically. It was a gag strip that eventually found a plot, and the author mapped out how they wanted to end it. I think it's a pretty good story overall, kind of. But I think the number one ingredient when you're playing Calvin Ball to make a compelling story that has interest and so on and so forth is, whenever you make up a rule, you write it down, or you keep it. If you say a thing is true, it needs to remain true.
Yeah.
It's when you're playing an improv game by yourself, which is kind of what writing a Calvin Ball story is, and on the fly, we're rolling with the punches week to week. The one thing you really need to do in order to keep the story rolling and keep it compelling and keep it feeling true, keep the suspension of disbelief maintained, is rules need to remain consistent. If you come up with a new rule, that has to remain true.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think is the big failing of this story, is that it doesn't keep up with its own rules.
There's also smaller things, it's bad at escalation and a couple of other issues, but yeah, it doesn't keep up with its rules, because it feels like, we'll get into this in a hot second. One of my other points about the story is that, Somber is, I think, writing from a very reactive perspective, and that's a terrible way to write a Calvin Ball story. But the big problem with the pacing comes from, I killed off my characters too early, and I keep changing things, because I haven't settled on what I actually want the story to be about. And that's a bad place to be when you're working sequentially forwards, and not being able to actually properly edit. One of my points here is literally just fucking your editors fucking suck. I cannot decide who I hate more in this project, Somber or their editors. Somber is a shit writer, but their editor, a proper editing staff could, in theory, buff out a lot of the problems of the story. A proper editor should be able to just go this plot line's kind of superfluous and isn't really going anywhere. What do you want to do with it? And actually work with that, as opposed to just being never mind. It was actually retconned out of existence. Is always the answer, and that's fucking awful. It makes for just such a it makes for a such inconsequential story when literally anything could just be fake at any given time. But yeah, so pacing, editing, Rampage sucks. Everything sucks. It's all bad. I do want to make one concession about the story, because I've been having a lot of discussions with a friend who's been reading alongside us to get caught up to the book as we do these episodes, which I explicitly told them not to do, by the way. Do not read this book if you can help it, under pain of death or torture.
It's a self-enforcing edict. like you don't do it in the same way, like, don't eat the plutonium.
Yes.
like
don't eat the gun. Don't.
Face barrel away from...
Point at enemy, not itself. But, because we bitch a lot about this, and I don't want to just... The thing I always want to try and reinforce about doing a podcast where we review this thing is I don't want us to just be like shitty critic based television web series kind of problems where we just bitch about things for the sake of bitching because that's our brand. So the couple of good things I do want to say about the story is that the one especially good thing about Project Horizons that does keep it pretty decent is that Somper is really good at set pieces. He's terrible at getting people to the set pieces, but when a set piece is actually happening, that's usually when it's at its best. Like, fight scenes are usually pretty good, because there's a strong sense of stakes. There's usually, like the ones where Black Jack is actually fighting named characters are usually pretty good. Outside of Fury, I can't really find myself complaining too much about her, like, fighting another named character, because usually there's, like, a lot of, like, tension, and there's a lot of cool drama, and a lot of the fights have a lot of very interesting character. There's a really early one that I talked about like two books ago where like BJ opens the whole fight like drunkenly glassing a guy with a bottle, which I think sells more of her character than all of the like tell we've been told about Blackjack up to this point. Like, it's the one case of show that we've seen in a long while, and that kind of stuff works really well for me. It, unfortunately, a lot of the, like, getting to those set pieces is a long, grueling, exhausting process. And a lot of that can be, again, chalked back up to editing. If this was a complete work, a huge thing that could have been fixed of this story is you could cut out all of the fucking travel time it takes to get to the set pieces and just have, like, a much tighter story that would have been far more interesting than I think that this one would have been. Like, if you cut, like, a million out of your million and a half words, it probably would have been a much better piece of work. Fuck. What else do I want to talk about? Psycho Shy. Psycho Shy is the worst. I don't know why she's in the story. My best guess is that she was originally... Her backstory was originally propped up as a kind of, like, second guess. Because if you remember, Psycho Shy is literally the daughter of Golden Blood and Fluttershy. For a really short amount of time, I think it's meant to be kind of up in the air, because there's also the side plot about Twilight Sparkle's kid, which is Blackjack's the descendant of. I think it's kind of up in the air which one she's meant to be. And I personally think it would have been much crazier and much, much hackier, but like much crazier if it was just like, no, Blackjack has actually been Golden Blood's daughter this whole time, which is definitely where I thought that was going for a while.
No. You know it's too weak.
But like everything about Psycho Shy is the worst. You can definitely tell where they're going with the you can definitely tell where Somber's going with the character, where she's meant to be propped up as a kind of like anti Blackjack. Like she's a violent thug who was raised as a murderer, as opposed to Blackjack, who's a violent thug that was raised as a murderer, because Somber keeps forgetting what his backstory of his story actually was.
Well, I don't think Somber would agree that Blackjack was raised as a murderer, because she was raised as a murderer with a badge, and that's everything.
Maybe, I don't know, but it's also remember that Sable 99 was not like, propped up to be bad. Like it was bad and fashy, but like, I don't know. Psycho Shy is a bizarre character that I can only assume is another like author pet, like one of the editors like pets, or the author just like liked the idea of the character, like liked the idea of a meme being turned into a whole character. I mean, I don't know. Somber is expressed interest in anime. Maybe he just really wanted a yandere character. Something I forgot to address in the previous chapters too, that is only coming to me now, is because it's a really really mundane plot point that's not gonna matter for two books. But, like, Fluttershy and Stygius just, like, end up together by the end of this book. Like, they're just a couple now. It doesn't matter. Like, I didn't even think to bring it up at the time, because it's, like, whatever.
Okay.
You gotta pair off the spares.
I don't... I don't know why Nosferatu boyfriend is still here. Like, he's served his purpose. Like, much like I wish I could come up with a sufficiently derisive nickname, because it makes me sad.
I genuinely can't think of a dumber name than Psycho Shine, to be honest. Like, there isn't a dumber name out there.
Yeah. It just hurts to say it.
I just say Shy Shy. Her actual name is Whisper, like, we know that now, and we could just call her Whisper. But I don't know.
So, yeah, Shy Shy. Shy Guy. There we are. In reference to the Super Mario villains, Shy Guy. Anyway. So with all that said, I want to get to the second note I had, a thing that I wanted to really bring up. Before we close out.
Yeah, I got one more major point that I really want to bring up.
Yeah, you can close us out with yours, and I'll just do mine now. So, one thing that really needs to be hammered home is we're told that Doof was the hero of his prison and was, like, saving the day and looking out for the little guy, and among all the other things that, like, Somber doesn't realize are incriminating. Like, for example, like, he breaks when he finds out he'll never be, like, his victim doesn't want to ever see or hear from him again, no matter how many times he, like, writes to tell her he's sorry.
Yes.
This is, like, that's, like, textbook abuser behavior. That's textbook will rape again.
Yes.
Stuff. Like, if he was at all actually sorry, then we would see, like if Somber wanted to humanize this fucker to us, and knew, like, what a human being was, and wasn't, if Doof was actually sorry, then we would, like, see the humanizing moment of him going, like, oh, all right, no, if I'm actually if Doof is actually penitent, the correct decision is, okay, then I will go the rest of my life without ever seeing this person again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is what I have carved out for myself. If like Doof cares about this woman, then he will respect her pain. They respect the pain that he has caused by, like, never risking inflicting it again. If that's her choice.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, if we're supposed to believe that this dude is so incredibly socially unaware that he could accidentally do a traumatic rape on an already, like, grieving friend, then how are we supposed to believe that he at the same time has the social awareness to be able to tell who's the victim in any given situation in a prison? Like, it's very easy to imagine, like, a group of abusive monsters, like, establishing a stronghold of power in the prison by going up to people who they can't confront, who they aren't strong enough to confront, and going, "Doof, save us!" Like, I just wanted to, like, lay that out. Like, there's, like, every reason to believe, based on, like, the everything we've been told about Doof, he probably hurt a lot of innocent people, saving the day.
Yes, being a hero. I think the image that Somber wants to buy is the idea that, like, Doof had became, like, something of a, like, heroic stoic, like, he, like, a brooding like hero type that does heroism almost incidentally, by just the nature of them being a big, angry, pissed off jerk. But it's supposed to be, like, venerable and honorable that he does it because he's, like, accidentally doing good. But, like, that doesn't work when you've made your character fucking Forrest Gump, Somber. Like, that doesn't fucking work.
Well, like, Forrest Gump without a core of decency.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is, like, the important thing is that, why, you know why people like Forrest Gump? Forrest Gump was a sweet boy that everyone loved. Because he was also a nice person.
You could never, ever convince the character of Forrest Gump to do an accidental rape. It's just not in him. Like, he would be presented with the notion and go, "Well, gosh, that, I don't know. If that's what it takes to win her heart, like, then I guess I don't want it."
Yeah, it's, oh, man. Oh man, Doof is the worst. But that doesn't let me lead into our final point of the night. The worst character of them all in the entire story, Blackjack herself. The thing I wanted to talk about a lot in this chapter is the concept of rehabilitation. And I don't mean the idea of rehabilitation in like the prison sense of being rehabilitated to society or whatever. Like you're no longer a dangerous violence to society or whatever. The concept of rehabilitation in fiction has a slightly different meaning, which is that it implies the idea that you are not when you rehabilitate someone's character, you are not making the character better. You are trying to bolster people's opinions of a character's bad decisions. So in the case of Blackjack, this entirety of Book 3 largely exists to be a rehabilitation of Blackjack's character. But what I mean of is that, like, we talk about this in a very metaphorical, goofy sense in the first chapter of this book, about how, like, Blackjack is, like, literally and metaphorically baptized. She is brought back from the dead, and she is now essentially a new mare. She's been cleansed of all sins. And whether, again, depending on how hokey you want to look at that, that's its own thing, fine. But something I genuinely do believe about the theme of this particular chapter, of this particular book, rather, is that everything that Book 1 and Book 2 Blackjack did functionally does not matter. So an important aspect of rehabilitation is that when you bother to actually reconcile a person's flaws in a story and try to work them to be a better character, you have to acknowledge those flaws. But when you rehabilitate a character in this context, you are ignoring their flaws. And the story constantly goes of its way to ignore her flaws. It is never mentioned again. It is never mentioned again after her crucifixion that Blackjack is in fact a rapist. It is never mentioned again. 21 never brings it up again. Blackjack never mentions it again. The story never mentions it again. She's effectively completely forgiven of that sin and crime. The only reason why you would even think about it anymore with this in this podcast is because we keep bringing it up, because we don't let that kind of thing slide in the fanfic podcast. But the story certainly goes of its way to try and tell you that no, this never happened. It effectively didn't happen.
Yeah, because it's on the other side of the purification by violence. Yep.
Same case with Stable 99. Same case with basically everything. Every time Blackjack makes a mistake now, it's always talked in vagary. It's always, it's the broad concept. Like, when I read out that speech that happened last chapter, she never mentions any of the things she's done that's wrong. She's just done an accumulated number of wrongs. But she's making up for them, and she's really, really sorry. This is another important tactic in rehabilitation, is you never really talk about the specific details of the thing the person did. You just amend that, no, yeah, they did some bad stuff, but they're good now. We promise. We promise they're no longer a racist. We promise they're no longer a rapist. They're really, really sorry. And the problem as it pertains to Blackjack's character is it means that it's very slippery and hard to remember that she did these things at all, because the only way you would remember them is, like, especially with something that's this long. Like, a million and a half words is a hard time to remember all the details. And if the story goes of its way to never, like, explicitly never mention the fact that Blackjack is a rapist ever again, even at times when she's being showcased off all of the horrors and traumas of the things she's done, then it's going out of its way to say that, no, that basically was retconned. To some credit, at least, or not even credit, like, I don't know how I would feel if, like, we got a retcon that, like, I don't know, Blackjack had, like, an evil twin or something like that. Because there's no way that she can un-rape 21. Like, that just can't happen.
Was possessed by the Phalanx or whatever. Green Lantern, DC.
Oh, the Parallax.
Green Lantern went on a genocidal. Yeah, possessed by Parallax for the whole first half of the story. Only attained free will after being raped to death.
Yeah, she's an anti-spiral and has the, like, alternate personality thing. But it so goes of its way to never acknowledge that. And the hilarious thing is that because, though, Blackjack is a character that exists to suffer and grieve and be in pain. She has to have new traumas to happen to her. So she either has to be violently raped herself, which is what happens, or she has to, like, beat a child literally almost to death. Because we need new things. Because we can't acknowledge the old things, because the old things are unforgivable. I'm sorry, there's literally no way you can forgive a character for being a rapist. That's just not possible. No good human being could ever forgive that. So the only way to do that is to just sidestep it entirely as if it never happened.
I mean, I can't think of an example of how, but I could sort of, like, in broad theory, see myself forgiving but not absolving a character.
Yeah,
like,
I suppose
that's
what I mean.
Acknowledging that a character, like, is a different person, like, has become a different person, but, like, yeah, like, never forget.
Yeah, you're like, no longer a danger, like, but I also can't forgive you. Like, that's my sentiment. I have no ill will towards you, but you still did that thing. That's never going away. How I wanted to tie this back to Doof is I think that the way that, like, the reason that Doof gets so much, like,
posthumous
rehabilitation himself is to prop up the idea that Blackjack should deserve forgiveness by the audience, because Doof is functionally the same way. He's also a rapist that we're supposed to forgive because he did all this hero stuff, which almost, like...
And yet, while doubling down on the... Like, doubling down on all the behaviors that made the rape a problem.
one last detail, because we kept talking about it. Heck, it just immediately escaped my brain. I wanted to talk about something else about Blackjack. Oh, the one last thing I think I want to talk about the story is, just before we go to our ending, is, like, two things. The thing that I neglected to start this with, which is the kind of, like, mission statement why we do this, and the other thing is that I don't think Somber is writing this reactively, is my two things. So I guess I'll start with the first thing, which is that it's important to remember the reason why we do this podcast is partly in a exorcism for me personally. This is something that has been haunting me for fucking half a decade, and I want it to go away. It's something that plagues my mind, or it plagued my mind for a very long time. It's something that I would just think about a lot. Like, I'd think about all of the problems with it. But it's so hard to explain why any individual detail is bad without explaining the entirety of the story. So that's kind of what this podcast is. And Weird is just along here for the ride as a kind of, like, accountability buddy, so that I'm not always just screaming at the top of my lungs.
I'm some sort of weird anti-Virgil. You know, I guess I'm Dante if Virgil was actually the protagonist. Like, Virgil needs to work through some stuff.
you're here. You're here to suffer with me.
I'm here to pick you up, Mr. Frodo. It's a terrible weight, Mr. Frodo, but you can carry it because I'm here to carry you. That's the metaphor we're going on. I'm the Samwise on this
trip. Perfect. I wouldn't have it any other way. So it's always an important remember that, like, it's not just vitriol and bile. I think a lot of it is also something of a PSA to the community, on which I feel I'm trying not to just sound like I'm talking down to the audience and saying you're dumb for liking this. But I think to a certain degree, I think the reason why people like this so much is because their exposure to long-form work is limited, because it's just innately limited. I think this story has a lot of problems that people overlook because of the sheer length of the work. You know, I just think it's worth talking about because of that. It's an interesting microcosm of all of the problems that happens in bad fiction. Like there's a lot to be said about the idea that, like, bad fiction informs us better on how to write better fiction than good fiction can. Like, good fiction inspires us, but, like, bad fiction educates us, I guess, is the statement I'm going to use. That's the put it on a coffee mug thing. And the other thing I want to talk about the story is that something is a growing conspiracy theory within me is the belief that a lot of this story is written in such a way that Somber writes a chapter, reads the comments, and then adjusts the story based off of those comments. which is a shit way to write, just sort of in general, because what you end up making is a piece of work that is constantly trying to retcon details based off of the general vibe that they're getting from, like, from the comment section. Like, it's important to take audience criticism in general, but when you're literally like, okay, I'm going to kill off a character, everyone hated that. Oh, they're alive again! See? They're not dead, they were just sleeping. Is just, like, a bad way to write, because, like, a general problem with this story is it feels super non-committal in every direction. Like a large bulk of our problems are like, okay, Rampage is unfocused because she has there's no decision made on, like, what her character actually is. Lacuna is unfocused. Scotch Cape is irrelevant. 21 is a monster. Glory has no character. Blackjack is the fucking worst thing ever. Sanguine was secretly not even that bad of a bad guy. The Zodiacs were all doing this for stupid reasons. The War had no reason for it. Steel Rain is some sort of dumbass pretty boy. The Reapers are the dumbest. Like, they're propped up as being the Genghis Khan of the Wasteland, but are just a bunch of morons. You end up with a story where you're constantly trying to, like, you're constantly trying to, like, make your audience like you. Like, I'd always talk about how the story feels insecure. And part of the reason why I believe that is because, having read a lot of forum posts by Somber is insanely insecure about his work. At least he was while writing this. So, I genuinely believe the idea that a lot of what the work, like, a lot of the reason why the work is so wonky is because it's just Somber's like, oh, people will like me now if I write the story good, which is pathetic enough to almost make me feel something for Somber, because I can definitely understand that perspective as a creator. But the problem is that you wrote a story where you made your main character a rapist and then tried to come back from that. Like it's,
and not own it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, it's so, I don't understand this, like, paradox of, like, how you can find it in you to keep producing content without caring about, without, like, without, like, enough investment to, like, cultivate, like, I don't even know how to articulate it. I think I had sort of a revelation that, like, yeah, Somber strikes us both as extremely politically reactionary in a lot of, like, the hot takes that have come up throughout this story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of telling that a thing that's commonly true of people with extremely reactionary political beliefs is they seem to lack the capacity for shame in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might be a contributing factor to their ability to be this prolific. Like, they don't... It's easy for, like, someone like me, I guess, to, like, get really writer's blocked and really hung up and really self-sabotaging with, like, trying to do creative work because, like, I don't want to be embarrassed by the things.
You don't want to make bad content.
Like, I want it right the first time.
Yeah.
And even though, like, I understand on a sort of philosophical level, it doesn't have to be right the first time. Like, there's, like, you can always just put it down and, like, not release it, or, like, put it down and be okay with, like, hitting it with a second draft. Especially if you're just putting it out as, okay, here's my first sketch. Like, here's my initial. And the, like, just the principle of a yes-ending yourself on a Calvin Ball sort of writing project. Like, all right, we've established this thing is true, but you know what? Can also be true, but... And I think I just meandered there for a lot, so I think we're done with this episode.
Yeah, I think we're done.
I suspect. We're done with this episode, so like us on all the social medias. Thou Art Fi is an extremely not safe for work Twitter. I guess which one of us runs that one. We post the episodes there. At Weirdington E is currently the leftist version of Black Pill, like just a lot of screaming about, like, if you can't organize people to vote, how are you going to organize people for the Great Revolution?
Yeah.
Stupid motherfucker.
I don't know. I'll fight you on that after the podcast, I guess.
Yeah, anyway. So at Weirdington E, you can email me directly at weirdingtonesq@gmail.com. You can put hearts and give us comments to feed the dark gods of the algorithm on iTunes and Podbay and wherever, whatever other podcatcher you're listening to this on. It really helps us out a lot, and it proves you're there.
You can donate to Weird's Ko-Fi page directly in the month of January, where we'll be starting up a Patreon, in which we do, like, bonus episodes and additional content and shit like that. I'm independently of this, I'm also an artist, and maybe I'll start, like, just drawing stuff for the pod. So you can look forward to that. What is it, next week or the week after? I think we're going to be taking off. I don't remember what I said or what we should agree to.
One of the coming 2 weeks in December, we're taking off because of Christmas, because of
Christmas.
Because of Christmas. One of these 2 weeks, look out for the podcast not being there. You'll be able to tell
because it won't be there
because it's just.
Because we're gonna be starting up next book like right away. But yeah, we need I want a break because of the holiday season, and also just it's a good time because we're at the end of another book. So I figured it's a good time. But yeah, thanks for listening to us for 50 some odd episodes and all sorts of dumb shit and us meandering through 3 books. The next book is going to be what I'm going to call The Road to Thunderhead. The Road to Thundermania.
All Luftwaffen all the time. Hooftwaffen. Robert Kopp versus the Hooftwaffen. That all promises to be a terrible mistake.